Hi everyone, here's what's bothering me today. It has, once again, noticing a pattern here, been an absolute doozy of a week. But there is some lighter stuff, so let's just get that out of the way first and foremost, because otherwise I don't want to dread talking about it. And so the first thing that we're going to talk about today is this story from Canada where apparently Tim Hortons is partnering with Justin Bieber to sell Timbit flavors called Timbiebs. Oh my god, I want out of this timeline. And a sign that Tim Hortons should well and truly be dead to all of us and that they've completely lost the plot, they're partnering with, you know, megastar pop sensation Justin Bieber to launch this limited edition run because it's like, hey man, we really got to get people buying our product. Should we improve the product? Maybe return to our roots? Nah, let's just get some other kind of corporate grab that will hopefully bring people in. Never mind if it's actually a good product. We just need some name recognition to get us that sweet, sweet money. That's where Tim Hortons is, apparently. But, that's about par for the course, I guess. So yeah, welcome to the Sunday Sum Up, everyone. Strap in. So you know how food insecurity is kind of a thing right now, and lots of people are really struggling to afford anything to eat, and so they have seen, you know, everywhere, like in Canada, the United States, Britain, we have seen a significant increase in people using food banks because, again, governments refuse to adequately take care of their people. But before I go down that whole rabbit hole of content, I want to talk about something that, again, people love to say. Capitalism is the most efficient system. It creates so much abundance. And it can create abundance. The problem is then how they use that to create an artificial supply or supply choke in order to manipulate prices. Because, you know, free market is all about price manipulation, am I right, people? But anyway, what this means is that because of the system that we have created and are forced to participate in every day, lots of food basically sits and rots in dumpsters, which I know we saw before where cops were guarding dumpsters because places like Walmart were throwing it out. And so we're going to talk about Walmart again today because what you're about to see is incredibly egregious. Over 2,000 pounds of fresh pork being rejected by the Walmart distribution center because the sell-by date occurs when their stores are closed for Thanksgiving. This product will still be safe to eat for the next 15 days, but they won't even attempt to sell. This will end up in a dumpster today. 2,000 pounds of fresh pork ready to go and be sold and be consumed. And if, oh, whoa, look, it can't all be sold, then you can donate to other people who really need it and maybe have a nice Thanksgiving barbecue or something, right? Nope, we can't do that because this is going to expire on our sell-by date. Not that, you know, we can't sell it up until that point, but because when we have to sell it by and we're gonna be closed on that day, we're going to reject this entire shipment. 2,000 pounds, and that's like what, a ton or more of perfectly good pork meat going bye-bye for no other reason than, oh, well, we're going to be closed on that one certain day, and that kind of sounds like a hassle, so nope, there goes all that food and all that grain that raised them and all that work and exploited labor and emissions, and it is such a phenomenal waste of everyone's time and money and resources for it to rot in a dumpster when it is perfectly capable of being eaten right now and being sold for the next few days or few weeks. But remember, folks, capitalism is apparently the most efficient system. This is also why a lot of people, myself among them, love to point out that it's not really that we don't produce enough food, we produce enough food to feed like more than double the human population at this point or something. Like, we produce enough food to feed 12 billion people. The problem is how we distribute that food. And capitalism is definitely one of the hurdles that is standing in the way of actually feeding everyone. But anyway, I digress. On to the next story. If this is how we're starting, imagine how the rest of this goes. So speaking of wasteful emissions, I guess I should talk about COP26 for a hot second. Now, I would actually want to try and talk about the aftermath of that, but I think it's going to have to wait until Monday or possibly Tuesday's video, depending on work schedule and stuff. But I do want to talk about it a bit because, as someone was pointing out, while the whole thing was going on, there's a huge oversight. Well, one of many oversights, let's be honest here, were being made at COP26, but it's pretty damning about just how disinterested the actual leaders of the world are when it comes to tackling this problem and who needs to be addressed and restrained. There's two tweets from Jason Hickel online that I want to bring attention to. The first was on November 7th and the second was on November 9th. The November 7th one says the following. This is striking. The emissions of the richest 1% are 30 times higher than what is compatible with staying under 1.5 degrees. And national climate policies do basically nothing to change this. And yeah, there's a handy little graph there. And, you know, as usual, links will all be down below. But yeah, notice how that's a very glaring oversight amongst many countries, whether they're developed or not, is they do nothing to actually rein in the behaviors of the rich. And we talked about this. In fact, I think last Sunday when we were again talking about COP and how Prince Charles there was saying, oh, we almost do a pot. And that's while he is producing in the span of 11 days, 18 times the carbon emissions of the average Brit. So, yeah, that's exactly what we need to really be addressing here. And so this brings us to the second tweet. The second tweet is where he says that the emissions of the richest 10% alone are on track to gobble up the remaining carbon budget for 1.5 degrees, totally irrespective of what the rest of the world does. The rich are literally devouring the planet. And I mean, yeah, unfortunately, my guy, we've been saying this for a while, which is why people started saying eat the rich on top of tax the rich. Because, you know, billionaires, quite frankly, shouldn't exist. Between the emissions they produce and the system of capital that they continue to support and expand is resulting in the death of the planet that is going to negatively impact all people. It's going to happen here in Canada just as it's going to happen in, you know, South Africa. The difference is that we are going to face less of that in the immediate future, whereas of course it's the underdeveloped world that produces the least emissions that is going to get the unfortunate worst of the shit bucket. And again, our leaders just don't seem to actually do what needs to be done to tackle the rich. So again, I will point people to that video I made about real action we can take in the meantime to actually start holding these people to account. Because if you want capitalists to do anything or to hear what you're saying, you have to speak to them in a language they understand, which means you need to affect their pocketbook and their bottom line. But yeah, it is very telling and very unfortunate that at, you know, this giant summit where, oh, we need to save the planet, it's all our mutual shared planet, and our leaders are completely failing and they're openly allowing like the oil and gas company to quote unquote work with them at the summit. And it's all just disappointment after disappointment and instance of hypocrisy after instance of hypocrisy. And we're meant to look at these people and see real leadership. Don't think we're getting that. All the more reason for us to, you know, organize ourselves and do what needs to be done in order to actually hold these people, and especially the wealthy, to account, because those are the people wasting the planet's resources and making ridiculous levels of emissions, especially per capita, and allowing for the system to just continue unabated while they again owned and fund the media that tells us that everything is okay when it absolutely clearly isn't. The short and sweet of it is that the rich are absolutely to blame for this, yet they are not facing any of the actual challenges or repercussions because, again, they are just part of the ruling class, which also controls the government and media, etc. So that's why it needs to unfortunately fall to us, the common people, to actually try and get that stuff done. And isn't that just so sad? Again, not to say that there isn't hope, it's just still really disappointing to see this from our supposed world leaders. And so I guess while we're still on the subject of COP26, I'm not going to, again, share the whole Abby Martin thing and her question about the Pentagon and its massive budget. You know, how come we're saying, oh, we care about climate change, and yet no one's actually addressing the fact that the Pentagon is one of the biggest emitters of carbon on the planet. It emits more than 142 countries combined. So that's terrifying. But I know everyone's probably seen that by this point. I want to bring something else to people's attention that's of a similar nature. To actually put not only a figure, but to also show in a visual contrast how pathetic all of this is from the American standpoint. Biden's budget allocates $38 billion to reduce CO2 emissions, yet keeps $778 billion for the largest producer of CO2 emissions, which is the Pentagon. And again, these are in billions of dollars, but as you could see on that graph, the difference is staggering. Yeah, the Pentagon needs more money, even though they just pulled out of a war overseas. But no, they need more money, and the world just kind of has to deal with that, unfortunately, because America is the sole hegemon at this point. So that is something that more people definitely need to keep in mind, the fact that the US military is the world's biggest institutional producer of greenhouse gases. That is really ridiculous to say, and yet unfortunately it is true. So again, good on Abby Martin for pointing that out. But just to give people an actual visual example of how the, oh look, the infrastructure bill, and you know, it's a great thing. It's a drop in the bucket compared to what needs to be tackled, which is the Pentagon. But that is just not a conversation you can have in America, so long as the ruling neoliberal elites have control, which unfortunately they absolutely do. And then the last thing from COP26 I want to talk about in this video, Lord knows we've got more to talk about this upcoming week, but anyway, the last thing I want to talk about is this tweet from Rick Smith, where he says, "Good discussion with Oil and Gas Canada, COP26, regarding net zero and Canada's future." That alone should tell you everything you need to know about how terrible and pathetic and fundamentally useless COP26 is, or rather was. Oh look, you know, we're working with the oil and gas industry. That's totally fine, right? It's not like they're to blame for a great many of the problems that are facing humanity and going to result in untold suffering in the decades to come. So yeah, isn't that just so infuriating? We had a good discussion with the people who caused the problem to help get this bad in the first place. Oh my god. Like, can we not? You know what I mean? Like, can we just not? For just a little bit, can we actually show some goddamn leadership here? It is absolutely infuriating to see quote-unquote coverage like this during what's considered a do-or-die period in humanity's history for ensuring that there is a continued, relatively safe and stable future for humanity. This is literally having discussions with the enemy, and it is absolutely infuriating to me. Oh, and still touching on like climate change, you know, oh, we all gotta do our part and all that kind of nonsense. I recently saw a very interesting article from The Independent. Men less likely to recycle because they are worried people will think they're gay, study claims. Apparently, scientists say measures to save the environment are often seen as typically feminine things to do. Fellas, is it gay to do your part to help save the planet? Oh my god. So apparently, like, as the scientists, you know, allegedly found out, this has to do with the fact that traditional women's role of being the caregiver of the family, and so taking care of the planet, it's like, oh, that's women's work. Which, I mean, oh my god, clearly we have work to do, but anyway, it's just so weird to think that, like, oh yeah, I'm taking out the recycling, or I'm using a reusable cotton bag, somehow that means I'm gay, and like, wait, sorry, do we still have to have this conversation about how being gay is not a bad thing at all? Like, hello? Like, come on, you're telling me it's gay to have this tote bag that says Eat the Rich on it? There's clearly just so much wrong with so many people in our society and with the West in general, and outdated gender norms and stereotypes that is helping to worsen the situation on the planet. You know, more people could be doing more, but they aren't doing so because of like nonsense gender norms and perceptions of, oh, but like if I take out the recycling and sort and separate my paper from my tin and metal and glass, people are gonna think I'm gay. Like what? I am so done with this timeline. Anyway, on to the next fun story. Speaking of hypocrisy from the ruling class, there's this lovely little video from the New York Times that I saw on Twitter a little while ago. Affluent liberals tend to be really good at showing up to the marches and talking about how they love equality. But by their actions, what they're actually saying is, yes, we believe in these ideals, just not in my backyard. And again, I encourage everyone to watch the, it's just over 5 minutes long, so not a whole lot of time, but I'm not going to put the whole thing here. But there is a part that I absolutely want to share with everyone that I really take issue with because, it hits the nail on the head.
So everything on this map that is yellow is zoned for single family homes like this and this. One family can live here. But here in Palo Alto, there are a lot of new jobs. This is a desirable place to live for new opportunities. Over the past 8 years, the San Francisco area has added 676,000 jobs, but only 176,000 housing units. So a few years ago, the city council voted to change the zoning of one section of the city, right here. Specifically this 2-acre plot of land. They wanted to change it from low density housing to higher density housing so that they could build a 60-unit affordable housing complex for elderly members of the community. Okay, so they changed the zoning. Start building the 60-unit complex. No, the overwhelmingly liberal residents of Palo Alto decided to hold a vote to overturn the decision to revert it back to low-density single-family housing. Back to yellow. And it passed. And the zoning was overturned. So now when you go to this plot of land, instead of an affordable housing complex for the elderly, what you're gonna see is this. A row of just a few houses, all of them massive and worth around $5 million each.
I think people aren't living their values. You go to these meetings in these neighborhoods where they're talking about a new housing project, and it's always the same song, and it goes like this. I am very in favor of affordable housing. We need more of it in this community. However, I have some concerns about this project.
We have the hearts to do this, but we're doing it wrong, and we're dictating and harm onto the neighborhoods.
And then off we go with the concerns, and then nothing ever gets built.
This is happening all over California. And the result is that these neighborhoods are so expensive that they keep anyone out who isn't a part of this small group of super rich residents, many of whom bought their properties decades ago, and who spend their time fighting vigorously to keep the value of their real estate assets super high.
If you want to keep Palo Alto the kind of neighborhood and community that we all treasure, low intensity, low density, safe for kids to walk to school, you've got to vote against Measure D.
There's an aspect of sort of greed here and of nervousness.
I have never seen such a perfect instance of liberals going completely mask off and showing themselves as the true monsters that they are. What is it that Shakespeare said? There's daggers in men's smiles or something like that? Look, we absolutely believe in affordable housing, but you know, we're worried about how that affects this neighborhood and our property taxes and our home values, etc. Even though, again, the proposal was actually for affordable living for seniors, you know, the elderly. And as they show on that map of Palo Alto, most of the city is for single, you know, separate home development, not for any kind of density, Main Street. And we wonder why, oh, how come kids don't play outside anymore? How come we don't know our neighbors? And oh, look, these new individual family homes, they do nothing to actually solve the housing crisis, and they're selling for $5 million a pop. Gee, why would the real estate market decide to inflict its own gunshot wound to the head and actually make things less, you know, successful and profitable for themselves? Huh, it's almost like they need to be forced into doing the right thing or something. But seriously, just, it's so infuriating to see the whole, look, we believe in affordable housing. Really, we do. But, you know, just not here, not in my backyard. And, you know, sure, we all see those comments online from people saying, oh, yeah, well, you know, would you like, you know, a row house right next to your, you know, lovely, nice suburban home? And it's like, listen, man, as someone who literally went and hung out and had sleepovers at friends in, like, tenement housing and stuff, You just kind of get used to it. People are poor, not dangerous. But this is often one of the very real fears and talking points that happen with people. And unfortunately, the New York Times really greatly captures this, whether they intended to or not. It shows that for all the talk of progressive policies, whether it's in the Democratic Manifesto and like outlining their policies or whatever, or in people in communities saying, oh yes, absolutely, I believe in this, we need to do it, when it comes to actually having an opportunity to do so, they will instead devote their time and energy to fighting it rather than supporting it. It's a smoking gun of hypocrisy. I just really don't know what else to say on the matter. What can I say, right? Libs are gonna lib. So another story that just absolutely wild, and unfortunately kind of touches on, like, I guess you could call it drama, and again, I'm not really about that, but I think in this context it deserves to be mentioned. So a while back, the Surf's TV had an interview with Richard Wolf, and apparently someone on Twitter named Jackson Hinkle made this tweet where it shows his own edited version of a video of Richard Wolf explaining the dangers of calling all wage earners working class. At least, allegedly. Here's part of that video, and pay attention to the cuts.
The parallel here is, once upon a time, people thought of all workers as being the same thing. And folks had to come along and say, no, that the fact that I share the identity with John or Mary over there, that we are all employees or workers or something like that, That's fine. We are. It's a very different thing, though, if, for example, a 20th century Communist Party has an argument that goes roughly like this. Since the vast majority of people are workers, then we all have in common this commitment to this politics in this way. That is not only a mistake in Marxian theory, but it's a political catastrophe waiting to happen. Marx understands that everything is contradictory. I am like you because we are both workers. I am unlike you because you're productive and I'm unproductive. That these things have to be given their recognition, their understanding, that if you make a unity of everybody, it's got to be a unity, and here comes Hegel, built on the disunity of your differences. That can be done, but it has to be understood as a task.
Now, I understand, you know, sometimes we're trying to edit things down for brevity or just to keep a consistent kind of point. That's fine. However, maybe there was some crucial context missing. And apparently there was, as the Serfs points out in their own clip, pointing out what Hinkel cut.
The parallel here is, once upon a time, people thought of all workers as being the same thing. And folks had to come along and say, no, turns out your racial difference matters. Turns out your gender difference matters. Turns out, and then fill in the blank, in a way, Marxism does that in terms of something you have to learn to understand before you recognize it when it's staring you in the face.
To use the statement that if you are not an employer, you're an employee, you are by definition a worker. Is that too broad of a statement to make?
No, I mean, you know, in and of itself, no. It's a question of whether you contextualize such a remark, such a statement, such a sentence, in such a way that it doesn't convey something which is incorrect. For example, that we're all the same, that the fact that I share the identity with John or Mary over there, that we are all employees or workers or something like that, that's fine. We are. We share that. And remember, he's a student of Hegel. Marx understands that everything is contradictory. I am like you because we are both workers. I am unlike you because you're productive and I'm unproductive. Or I'm unlike you because you're a female and I'm a male, or you're black or I'm white, or whatever it is, that these things have to be given their recognition, their understanding, that if you make a unity of everybody, it's got to be a unity, and here comes Hegel, built on the disunity of your differences. That can be done, but it has to be understood as a task.
That is honestly just so incredibly egregious and irresponsible. Jackson Hinkel is basically trying to misrepresent Richard Wolff's words when, again, a lot of his actual contextual, like, information behind that about, you know, why those separations or differences exist and why, oh, this is why you have to actually be cognizant of these things because of gender, race, class. Those are all very extremely valid and important points to keep in mind. He leaves those out in his own edit to try and make it seem like, oh yeah, calling all wage earners working class is actually a problem, when Wolff's real take is far more nuanced and complex than that. It's just dangerous misrepresentation. You'd expect that from Fox News, but unfortunately, guess what? I guess they're rubbing off on us in the worst way, and people like Jackson Hinkel here will just happily misconstrue Richard Wolff's words for, I don't know, grifter reasons, maybe? I really don't know. All I know is that this is really dangerous and messed up. And speaking of possible grifters, so, remember how a while ago I did a video about the emerging details of the Travis Scott tragedy at Astroworld? I didn't think I'd have to revisit this, but apparently we need to, because turns out Travis Scott and BetterHelp may be directly profiting off of this tragedy. Therapy Den is a TikTok user, and they made the following TikTok, which I am showing in its entirety because it's really telling and damning of both Travis Scott and the BetterHelp company.
BetterHelp and possibly Travis Scott are profiting off the horrific trauma at the Astroworld Music Festival, where 8 people were killed and hundreds were injured. Let me explain. I agree that kids were put at extreme risk so that corporate interests and streaming platforms could make more money with no regard to their well-being, and that pumping them into BetterHelp just confirms everything is for sale. And it turns out that BetterHelp jumped at the business opportunity to offer 1 month of free therapy services to anyone that has been affected by the festival events. Just as a reminder, BetterHelp clearly states in their privacy policy that they share your personal and private mental health info with third-party advertisers for marketing and business purposes. You can check out my pinned TikTok videos for deep dives into exactly what they're doing. So all the kids that sign up for the free 1 month should be aware that their data is being mined. Travis Scott could be making big bucks from all the referrals that he sends over to BetterHelp. How do I know this? Because back in 2019, BetterHelp was trying to partner with me as well, and they were waving a ton of money in front of me. I run therapydone.com, which is a progressive and inclusive therapist directory that matches therapy seekers with therapists. It's free to use, and it's free for therapists to create profiles. Back on March 12th of 2019, Jeff Williams, the Senior Director of Business Development at BetterHelp, reached out to me to see if I'd like to partner with BetterHelp. Basically, he was asking me if I would allow BetterHelp to create profiles on Therapy Den so that when people visited Therapy Den to find a counselor, they would be directed to BetterHelp to sign up for their services. Jeff told me that if I agreed to the partnership, then they would pay me $300 per referral. So every time someone visited Therapy Den and then entered their credit card info into BetterHelp, I would get $300 in my pocket. I said no. He said, I respect your decision, but would you please reconsider because we're offering to pay you a ton of money. He went on to tell me how a therapist directory of similar size is getting paid out by BetterHelp at about $80,000 a month, basically presenting me with a decision to potentially get $80,000 a month in exchange for sending them referrals and allowing client data to be sold to third parties while paying BetterHelp therapists absolute shit. I declined. So my question for Travis Scott, are you being presented with a similar deal? Are you getting a kickback for everyone who signs up using your Astroworld promo code? I really fucking hope not. Would love to hear more about the details about this partnership.
So yeah, all that offering of, look, hey, I know that was a tragedy. Here, we're here to help. By the way, we're gonna take all your data and send it to marketing firms while you're grieving. This is totally fine and not a symptom of a grotesque capitalist nightmare. And then apparently, on top of that, we find out from this Therapy Den person that BetterHelp also tried to reiterate to them the importance of, but come on, look how much money you can make. Thankfully, they said no. So kudos to you, Therapy Den, for having a moral conscience and a spine. Because a lot of people, unfortunately, in this capitalist hellscape would say, hey, yeah, wow, that's a lot of money. I could be set up and just things would be so much easier. Thank you, BetterHelp. So what if my, you know, beloved customers and my audience, so what if their data is sold to the highest bidder? I'm making money. Honestly, thank you for refusing that. And just like, people will know I'm bad at thank yous and just expressing how I feel about things, but it was so refreshing to see. It is the one bright spot of goodness in that unfortunately terrible TikTok full of all the ways in which capitalists are exploiting a terrible tragedy at the Travis Scott Astroworld concert. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you, Therapy Den, for not only bringing this to light, but also telling BetterHelp to get stuffed. And then finally today, we have a story from here in Canada that should be getting far more traction than it is. So here in Canada, several Jewish groups that are basically what they do is anti-defamation and rooting out anti-Semitism, the usual and unfortunate work that is required to root out neo-Nazis. And that's what we're unfortunately going to talk about in this segment. Well, there goes the monetization hope. So I have a Patreon if you're interested. And so the story is that there are allegations of Canadian troops training neo-Nazis and war criminals in Ukraine, and this has sparked a military review. And tangentially related was also reports by some Canadian soldiers who were training Iraqis over in the Middle East that some of the people they were training were also using torture. And some other not so nice things that I'm not going to say. And so while the military is issuing a review, at the same time, how we've seen the military behave recently with sexual abuse scandals, Can't say a lot of people feel terribly confident in this. And the review itself is also going to take months to possibly a year. And some of it, for again, security reasons, is going to have to be classified. And I know if you're thinking, well, is this it? There's kind of not much to that. Unfortunately, it gets so much worse. The same day that article dropped about the allegations and that it's going to spark a military review, a very interesting bombshell dropped right around the same time. Canadian officials who met with Ukrainian unit linked to neo-Nazis feared exposure by news media, according to documents. A year before the meeting, Canada's Joint Task Force Ukraine produced a briefing on the Azov Battalion, acknowledging its links to Nazi ideology. As you saw, I had to censor that picture because those guys actually have the Nazi flag on their helmets. And I know what you're thinking, wait a second, it's November, and this came out a few days even before Remembrance Day, when Canada takes a few minutes out of its day to remember the war dead from World War I and World War II and all other conflicts since then. And it's especially damning that in World War II, the one where, you know, we had to actually fight fascists, here we are in the modern day, training neo-fascists in Ukraine. Isn't that just so lovely and progressive? What is again especially damning is how the article points out that Canadian officials who met with members of a Ukrainian battalion linked to neo-Nazis didn't denounce the unit, but were instead concerned the media would expose details of the get-together, according to newly released documents. Oh geez, we're meeting fascists, are you worried?
Nah.
But what if the media finds out? Oh god, you're right! These out-to-lunch scumbags were more concerned that the media would find out that they were meeting with neo-Nazis rather than the fact that they were meeting with neo-Nazis. And again, folks, it gets so much worse. The Canadians met with and were briefed by leaders of the Azov Battalion in June 2018. The officers and diplomats did not object to the meeting and instead allowed themselves to be photographed with battalion officials despite previous warnings that the unit saw itself as pro-Nazi. The Azov Battalion then used those photos for its online propaganda, pointing out the Canadian delegation expressed hopes for further fruitful cooperation. What the actual fuck? Again, feel free to read the article at your own leisure and displeasure in the future. That's about all I want to touch on right now before, you know, this becomes even more of a, like, terrible demonetization pit. But, what does that say about the Canadian government and the people in high positions of power and leadership, including, by the way, the diplomatic corps? I know we all love to meme on Chrystia Freeland because her grandfather was a Ukrainian Nazi, but this is happening right now, and our supposedly liberal progressive government is signing off on training these scumbags. And this was found out again, you know, around the time when we come to reflect on, yeah, a lot of people died in wars, including wars where we fought Nazis. And again, despite warnings and being told, by the way, the people you're meeting are fascists, the core group of people, so like military leadership and diplomatic leadership, said, hey, you know what, that's fine, sure, let's take some photographs, whatever, but oh geez, if the media gets a hold of this, that's a bad thing. I wonder what other stuff people have gotten away with while in positions of power where they're more worried about if the media gets wind of it, rather than having the moral conscience to recognize that this is a bad thing and you should not go ahead with it. And I think, unfortunately, if there's any theme to emerge from this week's stories, that's the theme right there. The lack of a moral conscience that just kind of comes naturally from the cruel capitalist system we surround ourselves in every day. From being more worried about the media finding out you're meeting with fascists, or, you know, thinking, you know, maybe it's a bad idea to actually sell people's personal data to highest bidders while they're grieving. Maybe it's really messed up of us to try and make money off of this pain and suffering. The audacity of world leaders at COP26 to say, we're really concerned with saving the planet. Please pay no attention to the fact that we had good constructive talks with the oil and gas sector. Claiming you care about the climate while doing nothing to meaningfully address those making the most emissions, which are the wealthiest among us and the wealthiest nations. The lack of a moral conscience when editing a video and a response to suit your needs and your narrative rather than letting it stand on its own. the lack of a moral conscience to allow 2,000 pounds of perfectly good pig meat to go bad, all because of one day, even though you could sell everything in the meantime. Capitalism is absolutely causing us to lose our way, and I'm so tired of it. This was like, what, 12 or so stories that just casually touch on, yeah, you know, there's a lot of people in positions of power who've clearly lost any shred of morality. What's going on here? What's happened? Capitalism and power happened. It's so plain to see. And as people can no doubt tell, it is absolutely what's bothering me today.